Welcome to Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I have Ryan coming up for a joke first.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm a recovered alcoholic. All right, I have two jokes tonight. Why did the Christmas tree go to the AA meeting? Because it was lit, fam. And why is Christmas like your job?
Why?
Thank you. Because you do all the work and the fat guy in the suit gets all the credit.
Thank you, Ryan. So thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that may make noise and distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? Is everybody in the door? If so, we're going to start the meditation. All right, if everyone will, I'm going to lead the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, there's little cards in front on your seats. We're also using the cards as Christmas tree decorations tonight, if anyone can read that far. We don't have our poster tonight. So, God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. There's a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked a friend, Doug, to come up here and read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because it's the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important that one is. Please welcome Doug.
Hello, I'm Doug. I'm a recovering addict. I want to thank Joe and Dylan for bringing me here today. Thank you. The terms of spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must require immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such as transformations through frequent are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety. Because they develop slowly over a period of time, quite often friends of the newcomer are aware of the differences long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly ever have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of power greater than themselves. Most of us think the awareness of power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most empathetically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honesty facing his problems in light of our experiences can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with spirituality of this program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is a concept of prior to investigation by Herbert Spencer.
Thank you, Doug. So during the meeting, please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so please set your phones to airplane or meeting mode or just turn them off. All right, so now we're ready for our speaker. It's my last night chairing. I've had the privilege to introduce this guy the last few weeks, and I can honestly stand up here and say it's a guy I look up to in AA. He dedicates his life to this. He helps other guys. He's just one of those guys that, like, you can tell he doesn't say no to AA. He's always speaking somewhere. He's always working with another guy. He does a big book study in Pompano. He does a seminar during Mother's Day. I forget what it's called, but it's great. And it's just, it's wonderful to see. And it's, he's got a couple weeks left of his U.S. Alcoholics and God's tour. So, yeah, we're going to give you Pat.
Good job with the last name there. I like that. What the hell? A bunch of cockroaches up here. Seriously, look. Thanks, guys. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Pat Rogan. And thanks to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the program of AA, I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And for that, I'll be forever grateful. AA didn't just save my life, but it gave me one worth living. And he's right. I absolutely love this program. I chase it like I chased it when I got here. I chased it like I chased a drink and a drug. I continue to chase it. I chase speakers. A lot of them I listen to on CD because a lot of the speakers that I chased when I got here, they're no longer with us, which is good for me but not so good for them. But I'm going to first apologize for last week, and not because I did anything wrong. It's just that, you know, the ninth step is not a comfortable place for me to go back to, you know. And if it seemed like it was a downer meeting, it was probably because I don't do well, you know, looking back. You know, I don't like where I've come from. I get that all that had to take place and all that had to happen for me to be where I'm at. I get that. And for me to come up here and tell you that I'm grateful that I tore through people's freaking lives like that years ago to get here, I just can't tell you that. I'm not grateful for that. You know, this idea of not regretting the past and not shutting the door on it, that's hard not to regret. There's some people's lives that I tore up along the way, and it's not a fun journey for me. That step is not a fun journey for me to talk about. You know, to share the amends that I've had to make over the years, and some that I still have to make, and some that will never be complete. You know, there are some things that I can never write. You know, I can do the best I can, and I get that. I can find some peace in that I've done the best I can, but as I said last week, there's some bells that you just can't unring. You know, and it's not a pleasant place for me to be when I do that step. It's emotional. It's emotional for me, and usually I'm up and I try to be, you know, have fun up here, and that's just not a fun place for me to go. You know, so, you know, if it felt down to you, it was down to me too. You know, that's just the way it was, and that's just the way it is. You know, we can't change the past. You know, all we can do is move forward and learn from it, and try not to repeat that behavior moving forward, and that's kind of what we're going to talk about tonight. But before I get into 10, and I actually want to talk a little bit about 10 and 11 tonight, but before I get to that, I want to read something that I stole from Charlie P. years ago. I really, you know, I'm one of them guys that thinks you have to give them credit three times and then it's yours. You know what I mean? Like, you own it once you give him credit three times. But I like to give Charlie credit all the time. He's because Charlie Parmalee was my mentor. I owe Charlie Parmalee my life. You talked about the Big Book Seminar. You know, Charlie Parmalee was the Big Book Seminar. Some of you guys that know the history of some of the local history is incredible with Wesley Parrish and John Williams and, you know, guys that are no longer with us who put the Big Book Seminar together. You know, they heard Charlie Parmalee and Joe McQueenie do the Big Book Seminar out west and brought them here. And that whole story, I don't have time to go into the whole story, but Wesley actually fixed a raffle at an international convention to make sure certain people won the raffle so that they would get the Joe and Charlie tapes and then invite Joe and Charlie to come to their town to do the Big Book Seminar. Typical of an alcoholic, right? But when you talk about that lineage of Wesley and John, and my sponsor Brian, who became a sponsee of John's, carrying the message of the Big Book Seminar to me, and then me becoming part of that Big Book Seminar, absolutely saved my life. Absolutely saved my life. Charlie, you guys use the term here, Big Book comes alive. Charlie brought the Big Book to life, and made it a living document for me. And not a history book, you know, which is the way I was starting to read. When I picked up that book and I started reading it, probably like a lot of you, you started at page one and you read this war fever ran high thing, and you read it like a novel, you know, like I'm reading a story about Bill Wilson. Well, that's not what this book is. This book is the story of 100 men and women, how 100 men and women got sober, you know, and got their lives back together. That's what this is about. And Charlie unlocked the book like nobody ever did. So. All that to say that I stole this from Charlie, right? And so, you know, I've shared with you some of my history that you know, I almost want to say I was a tormented soul. I am a tormented soul, you know. And the truth is that that torment would get me drunk if it wasn't for what I've gained in Alcoholics Anonymous. If it wasn't for the power that I've found in Alcoholics Anonymous, I would be drunk. That's just the way it is. I still suffer from torment now and then. I know that there's a lot of people that come to the podium and tell them that now that they've worked the steps and they've had this spiritual experience, their life is so incredible now, and that they, you know, it's just nothing but roses and you know, great, just a great time. All and life is just beautiful, you know. And I wish I could just tell you that was true for me, but it's not. You know, and we were talking about earlier, the thing is that my life has these little peaks and valleys, you know, and the days are peaks and valleys. And during the day, there's some peaks and valleys. It used to spike, you know, up and down and up and down. And, you know, it would be depression, you know, manic and then depression. And that was just who I was. And the truth is that I probably still need medication. You know, that's probably the truth. That without this program, I would be on something, and whether it's legal or not. You know, there would be some kind of mood or mind-altering substance in my body, because I'm a crazy person. I really am. I just, you know, I'm a nutcase. I really am. I am my worst enemy. It's not your fault. I might blame it on you guys, and on the world. But it's just who I am. I'm still somewhat tormented. You know, and I found the solution in the 12 steps and today in the 10th step. And I really believe this with all my heart. I contemplated. I was one of those children that thought about taking my own life at a very young age. I hated who I was. I hated the way I felt. I couldn't feel the way I felt for one more freaking second, and I didn't know what to do with that. And we act out in a lot of different ways when we're younger, whether, you know, I was into fast motorcycles and fast cars, and I wrecked a lot of motorcycles and wrecked a lot of cars, and, you know, and whether it be sex or spending or whatever it was that would change the way I felt, I was excessive in a lot of areas, you know, and that kind of took me out of those thoughts, but I really did not enjoy my life, you know, and I think alcohol interrupted my suicide. I really do. At 16 years old, I really felt hopeless. I felt like that I would never have a relationship. You know, I felt like I was never going to be successful. You know, that I was going to feel the way I felt for the rest of my life. And halfway through a bottle of Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill, I knew a new freedom and a new happiness, you know. And when I had that drink, I didn't regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. When I picked up that drink, I could see how my experience could benefit others. When I drank, that feeling of uselessness and self-pity disappeared. When I drank, I lost interest in selfish things and gained interest in my fellows. When I drank, self-seeking slipped away. When I took a drink, my whole attitude and my whole outlook on life changed. When I took that drink, fear of people and economic insecurity left me. When I took that drink, I intuitively knew how to handle situations that used to baffle me. When I drank, I realized that alcohol was doing for me what I could not do for myself. I had a love affair with it. I mean, it changed my life. I mean, it took me out of that torment. You know. And when I got here, I was tormented again. It stopped working. Somewhere, it took 20 years. It took 20 years. But alcohol worked for a long, long time. My last sponsor before the sponsor I have now, who passed away 2 years ago, who was as close to a father that I've ever had in my life. It was the most intimate relationship with a man that I've ever had in my life. Used to say it gave me permission, and then it gave me absolution. And that was the deal. You know, alcohol and drugs gave me permission to behave the way I behaved, and then it gave me absolution afterwards. And the absolution stopped coming. And now I'm stuck with guilt and remorse and shame. And I can't stop drinking, but I'm not getting relief out of it anymore. And that's where they talk about the bedevilments on page 52, right? Where we have troubled personal relationships, can't control our emotional natures. We're prey to misery and depression. Couldn't make a living. That feeling of uselessness. I was full of fear. I was unhappy. And I couldn't seem to be of real help to anyone. That's where I ended up. in 1991 in a hotel room at Commercial Boulevard in 441, where I'm getting up to drink to pass out, to get up to drink to pass out, to get up to drink to pass out, and there's no relief in it. And I'm telling you today that if I would have gotten relief in it, I would still be doing it. I'd still be there. I wouldn't be here. The only reason I'm here is because I didn't have the guts to try to kill myself again like I did in 1989. And I didn't know what else to do. And that, you know, call it a moment of clarity, call it God's grace, you know, X factor, you know, call it whatever you want. But in a brief moment, I wanted help. And I called my sister for help. And my sister was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then here I am. You know, I end up in a meeting on March 26, 1991. You know. And I didn't think you guys were going to be able to help me. You know. And I became a meeting maker. You know. And I just, that's all. I mean, I was a 3-4 meeting a day guy. Because I was scared to death to go anywhere else. I didn't know what else to do. I was in the meeting and early in the morning, I'd go to work, I'd come back at noon, I'd go back to work, I'd come back at 5:30, and I wouldn't leave till 11 o'clock, and then I'd go to Denny's till all hours of the night with you guys and sit and freaking eat. You know? That's all we did is eat. Mm-hmm. And that became my life until I ran in to Brian, who had just been into a Big Book seminar with Joe and Charlie and carried a message to hope for me. You know, I tell you guys, I chase speakers, and I chase them on CD. I've been listening to Sandy Beach, and Sandy Beach, he always used his last name, by the way, and he's one of them guys that inspired me to do that, and reading what Dr. Bob says about it, about the anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film, not above, not below, at the level. You know, that he felt it was as much a violation not to use your last name here as it was to use it at press, radio, film, and we can include electronic media in that. You know, that if you want to know who I am, you need to know my last name. You want to find me, you need to know my last name. You know? And Sandy was always there. And Sandy, one of my favorite communicators. I just love, I still chase Sandy, and he's dead. You know, I got to meet Sandy 4 years ago. We were doing, he died 4 years ago, but just before he passed away, we were doing the Steps to Freedom over in Tampa, Brian and I. And we heard Sandy was picking up his 50-year medallion. And we ran down to his home group in Naples, and Sandy recognized us and said, "Sandy says, hey, you're the guys that were doing the Big Book seminar. You guys took the Big Book, yeah?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "Come on over here," and he sat with us for about 20 or 30 minutes and just talked to us about old times. But he's one of them guys that I chase on CD. You know, he's the history guy, and he's got the greatest stuff. You know, and he was talking about. Early AA, when he first came into AA, and how he always talks about how AA evolved, and he's a history guy. He'd take you through decades while you're listening to him, what it was like in the 60s when he got here, late 60s, what it was like in the 70s, what it was like in the 80s, right? And he was talking to one of the CDs I was listening to a couple days ago. He was talking about when he got here in the late 60s, and he was talking about what AA was like then, right? And AA, all they talked about is what we've gone through here, and that's the program of recovery. That's what we've been talking about for the last 9 weeks is the program of recovery. Steps 1 through 9, the program of recovery. That's the program of recovery. And he says, that's all they talked about. He said, there was one open discussion meeting for every 10 meetings. The other 9 meetings were either double speaker meetings or literature-based meetings. That you had to really kind of go out of your way to find an open discussion, open disgusting meeting, you know. You know, you had to, if you wanted to talk about your problems, they would have, like, even if you read Vision for You in the back of the book, it talks about they used to set one meeting aside a week where you could come and discuss your problems, and you could invite your wife and your family too, and you usually didn't get much to say. That was usually them that were talking about their problems, right? But they would set aside one meeting a week for open discussion. Yeah. And he says that that's all they talked about. That's why so many people got sober. That's why their success rates were so much better than they were in the 80s and 90s and up to where we're at now. Because all you heard was how bad my life used to be. How I worked this program of recovery and how incredible my life is today. Every speaker talked about that. That's all you heard about was hope. And if you look, at our stories, we have 42, 43 with Bill's story in this book. Every one of them is that message. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now having had an experience with the steps. Right? What it's like having an experience with the program of recovery. When I got here, there was one literature-based meeting for every 20 freaking meetings. You know, because it was open discussion hell when I got here. That's really what it was. Now, I didn't know any better. If you wanted to talk about your problem, there was a local clubhouse up in Palm Beach County where out of 50 meetings, you had 40 chances to talk about your problems. If you wanted to hear about the program of recovery or hear a message of hope, you had 10. Mm-hmm. And we wonder why our success rates went down. It was interesting listening to Sandy, you know. And the message that they were carrying then was the message that we've been talking about for the last 9 weeks, you know, is completing the third step decision, right? That's what we've done. We've completed the third step decision once we get to here where we're at today at step 10, right? The decision in step 3 was to work 4 through 9. We complete that decision in 9. Nothing changes in 3. The intent is there. The willingness to change is there. You know, we make a proclamation that we're going to change. But the real change takes place in 4 through 9. I am put back together in 4 through 9 the way God intended me to be. And for me, how that shows up is I've found a power greater than liquor. That's what I needed. I needed something as powerful as that. Because as I said, I'm tormented. And in those moments of torment, I have to turn to something. And you guys connected me to a power that was as powerful as alcohol. More powerful than alcohol. So in those moments of torment, rather than turn to the spirits, I turn to the spirit. Okay? Incredible that the word is the same. The problem and the solution is the same word. I stole that from Carl Jung, by the way. Spiritus contra spiritum. That's what he used to have to say. How lucky are we that Roland Hazard falls in with Carl Jung, a believer, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, one of the fathers of psychology and psychiatry, happens to be a believer. How many of those do you think are out there? You know, above his desk it says, God is present, invoked or not. How incredibly lucky are we? If that doesn't happen, we're probably not here. So the program is in place. I'm put back together the way God intended me to be. The book in step 10, it talks about sanity being returned. You know, and to me, what that means is the ability to see the truth in the drink or the drug. To me, that's what restored the sanity. That doesn't mean I don't do crazy shit, because I still do crazy stuff. You know, what sanity to me is the ability to see the truth just before I pick up the drink. One of my favorite lines from Bill Wilson in the documentary, he used to say, he's talking about that story in his, that situation in his story where he talks about the business deal that collapses because he drinks. He tells the story about that Applejack, about that moonshine going around the room, and he refuses it. As it comes around, now he just signed a contract that if he drinks, he's out. And he's got this chance to make great money because he's been sober a brief period of time. And he says this bottle starts coming around and he passes on it. He sees the truth in it. He passes on it. He says, nope, I'm not going to touch it. And it comes around again and somebody says, do you know what that is? That's the best Applejack this side of Mississippi. That there is Jersey Lightning. And Bill says this. It was as if a black curtain came down between me and the truth. That's insanity. That's insanity. To think that this time's going to be different drinking with these people's going to be different drinking. This brand is going to be different. The great obsession of every abnormal drinker. That somehow, someday, with somebody in the right place drinking the right stuff, that I'm going to be able to control and enjoy this thing. You know? Now, I had a 20-year history that says that's not true. It's never been true, but my mind would tell me this time is going to be different. That's sanity. No, it's not. No, it's not. It is not going to be different. Turn to the Spirit. Forget the spirits. You know, it's not going to work. It's going down the wrong road. I mean, they're even going to talk about giving our will back. That as a result of the first 9 steps, we've learned the proper use of the will. We're no longer self-will run riot. I'm no longer a tornado running through people's lives. I now have some compassion. I now care about people. I even try to help people that don't like me. I even try to help people that are pissed off. I even try to help people I'm pissed off at. That's incredible. That I would pray for people I dislike. That's insane. Right? I would have never thought that that would give me peace, that that would give me release, that that would take me out of that torment that I could suffer from. And we're talking, you know, we're talking about a design for living. We're talking about moving into the fourth dimension, Bill talks about, right? Bill talked about being rocketed into the fourth dimension in chapter 2. Right? Now he talks about living in the world of the Spirit. I think that's what he's talking about, a fourth dimension. Yeah. At the end of the promises, are these extravagant? And to me, they seem extravagant. But I think what he's saying, are they out of reach? You know, are these out of reach? No, they're not out of reach. Those promises are all promises of the mind. You know, they're not material. They're not relational. They're promises of the mind and the spirit. You know, just the opposite of what I read at the beginning. You know, that I've got a new power now. Instead of alcohol being the solution, I'm going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. I'm not going to regret the past or wish to shut the door on. I'm going to comprehend the word serenity and know peace. No matter how far down the scale I've gone, I will see how my experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity disappears. I'll lose interest in selfish things, gain interest in my fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. My whole attitude and outlook upon life have changed. Fear of economic and insecurity will leave me. I intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle me. I suddenly realize that God is doing for me what alcohol used to do for me. That's the deal for me, man. That is the deal. I needed a substitute. I needed something that was going to fix the torment because the alcohol worked. And you know what's crazy? What's really insane, after all alcohol and drugs have put me through, you know, when the crisis hits, my mind still reaches to that moment. My mind will still go back to 16 years old and remember the relief that came halfway through that bottle. You know, and I'm talking like instinctually, I need relief. But then the next thought is, nope, that's not true. God help me. Or who do I call? You know, I've got a lot of tools here. I'm in all three sides of this triangle. And we'll talk about that when we get to 12. This is I depend on you sometimes because I can't connect with that power. But then there's times when I can connect with that power that I don't necessarily need you. And then there's times that I need my sponsee worse than he needs me. And if it wasn't for some of my sponsees, I wouldn't be here today. And I can honestly say that. I wish I could tell you that my connection with God is so solid that I don't need those other two sides of the triangle. That's BS. I need all three sides of it. There are times where I wanted to go home and hide underneath the covers in self-pity, and one of my sponsees stopped me at the door and said, "Can we talk?" Really? Right now? Yeah, man, it's important, you know? And take me right out of my shit, you know? I need my sponsees. I need you guys. It's about the fellowship. It's about recovery, and it's about service. It's about all three of them. And I have a choice. You know, which one do I want to connect with? Which one can I connect with? I wish I could tell you I was just reliant on it. It's just not true. That's just where I'm at. This is about being in all three sides of that. And then he talks about, he says, are these extravagant? Are these out of reach? No. They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They'll always materialize if we work for them. And then it says, this thought brings us, what thought? Well, they'll materialize if we continue to work for them. So we got to continue to do the work. One of the few places that Bill repeats himself, using the word continue 4 times. You got to continue to do the work, continue, continue, continue. The fourth dimension, the world of the spirit, the new frontier Bill talked about. emotional sobriety. How do I stay spiritually fit? This is it. This is the design for living. 4 through 9 has become the design for living. Norm said it before the meeting. We used to always call step 10, 4 through 9 all the time. You know, 4 through 9 all the time. You know, inventory, 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 inventory. One thing we're going to learn here, we're going to do inventory the rest of our lives. That's it. Constant self-examination. Constant self-examination. Forget them. Can't change them. I can only change me. It's about self-examination. How do I stay out of conflict? How do I stay out of conflict? Conflict kills me. It just kills. I can't do conflict. I don't do conflict well. It gets into my gut. It just runs my life. And conflict shows up with me in a lot of different ways. It usually shows up, and this is where step 10 for me is so important. It usually shows up in something I wish I hadn't done, something I wish I hadn't said, an attitude I wish I wasn't showing, or something I don't want to do. Something I wish I didn't have to do, and something I don't know how to do. You know, it shows up in one of those areas. So I'm either back there at something I know, or I'm out there in something I don't know. You know, the two umbrellas that fear manifests itself in my life. The unknown and the known. You know, I know I don't want to do that. I know I shouldn't have done that. I know I shouldn't have said that. And this is about correcting it in the moment, right now. Rocketed into the fourth dimension. You know, we often talk about, you know, what was Bill talking about being rocketed into the fourth dimension, right? Well, probably back in that day, they were dealing with 3 or 4 dimensions. You know, we know now that science talks about an unlimited amount of dimensions, dimensions within dimensions, millions of dimensions within dimensions, probably. But back then, they were dealing with length, width, depth. What would the fourth dimension be? Time. Time. Now. Being rocketed into now. Only an alcoholic would have to be rocketed into now. Right? I mean, because that's where it's at. That's where we need to live, in the now. That's where the one day at a time, that's where the one moment at a time comes from. I'm sure that didn't get past Bill. Yeah. Living in the now, staying current, staying out of conflict in the moment. Moment to moment to moment, because we know if we're in conflict and we stay in conflict, we start piling conflict on top of conflict, we're building another 4th step. You know, that's exactly what we're doing. For me, it's about staying out of conflict in the moment. There is nothing else. There is nothing but now. And now. And now. That's all there is. And I can either piss on that moment or I can enjoy the moment. And it's usually me that ruins the moment. My attitude or my disposition or my whatever I say. I mean, I'm one of my favorite things about myself, which nobody else likes, is sarcasm. I love it. Nobody else seems to. It's like cutting with humor. You know, it's like wielding a sword that I think is funny. You know? I mean, I can just destroy you and then just say, I was only kidding, you know. Can't you take a joke? You know, I mean, that's just, I've got this sarcastic side of me that is just brutal, you know. And I wield it. And it's hard to reel in. And I have to use this step just like it says. I need to grow in this step. I need to continue to work this program. It talks about continue to do a 4-step. As soon as you feel uncomfortable, I call it the 10-step knot. You know, that knot in your gut. Like, I'm just uncomfortable. Why am I uncomfortable? I was comfortable an hour ago. Why am I uncomfortable right now? Inventory. Am I pissed off at somebody? Am I afraid of something? Did I do something I wish I hadn't done? Did I say something I wish I hadn't said? Usually don't have to look back too far if we're practicing this on a regular basis. And if you're not, do another 4-step. You know, start writing again. Do another 5-column. Do I need to call my sponsor? Do I need to talk to my sponsor? Is there something renting space in my head that I need to talk to my sponsor about? Am I acting out on a character defect? Do I need to ask God to remove this defect? Do I own amends? 4 through 9, moment to moment to moment. And we hear that all the time as an excuse. You know, at some point, I have to start showing some restraint, right? At some point, we have to stop acting out, right? Oh, I think it's always funny. Everybody said, you hear in meetings all the time, yeah, I like to share, I acted out on some old behavior today. No, that's current. No, that's not old. No, that's today. That would be current behavior, you know? Old behavior would be something you don't do anymore, you know? At some point, I hope that I get sick of apologizing for the same crap over and over and over again. And the word promptly is so important. The word promptly is so important. I went off. I mean, look, I could give you a million examples of how I either work or don't work this step, you know. And I wish I was the most spiritually fit guy all the time. I'm just not, you know. There's certain days I'm like walking on water, and there's other days that I'm another tornado. You know, I got a chip on my shoulder, and usually I show it in silence. You know, I usually am I'm the passive aggressive guy, you know. And what's wrong? Nothing. You know, is there anything I can do? No. Yeah. You sure nothing's wrong? I'm positive. Just back off. You know, I'm that passive aggressive guy. I'm the guy driving that knows you want over, but I ain't letting you over. You know, I'm going to speed up a little and then slow down a little so that you can't get in front of me or behind me. I'm just an asshole sometimes, you know. I wish it wasn't true. I catch myself, oh, there's some current behavior. You know, I think I should let this guy in. I mean, how important is it? That's why I start asking myself all the time, how important is it? You know, and get back to the freaking moment, you know. Why am I just an ass sometimes? You know, I'm dealing with this poor old lady the other day just driving me crazy. I don't know if I got there before the medication kicked in or what, you know. And that happens a lot, I think. You know, and she's just on my ass. She's just, and I lost it. I just lost it. Like, if you don't back off, I have to leave. I can't do this. And that's not normally who I am. And it shocked her, maybe even scared her. Yeah. And she's just a senile, needs medication old lady, you know. Like, normally I would see that. And so how can I be helpful? But this day I'm just not there, you know. And I don't know whether there's something going, whether I'm in pain. I was dealing with some physical pain that day, and there was stuff going on, you know. And if I don't promptly make that amends, I leave there. Drive into my next job carrying that burden with me. Why did I act like that? Why did I have to treat her like that? And it's too late to make the amends now unless I call her up. She can't hear me anyway. You know? What are you saying over there? You know? I think when I lost it on her, she said, what? You know? I need to do that now. I need to, before I leave that house, say, look, I apologize. My attitude was out of line. And leave there back in the sunlight. You know, current. And that's what that step is all about for me, is staying current. Staying in the sunlight. Staying out of conflict. I can't be in conflict with God. I can't be in conflict with internally, and I can't be in conflict with you. This whole thing is about getting right spiritually, mentally, and physically. This whole thing is about staying current in all three dimensions. You know? And I'm gonna do something that Bill does in the 12 and 12, and he doesn't do it here. But, you know, the design for living is a combination of 10 and 11 in the big book. If you go into 11, you see that 11 is really an inventory step. You know, it starts as an inventory step. It's a nightly inventory. And the inventory is, how well did I do step 10 today? You know, how well am I current? You know, did I get through this day void of conflict? The questions in step 11, when we retire at night, we work 10 all day long, spot check, you know, staying in the now, staying current. And at night, it's about, how well did I do? Answer the same questions. Am I resentful for anybody? Am I in fear over anything? Do I owe anybody an apology from today? Did I act out any defects of character today that I need to ask God to remove and help me with? Do I need to call my sponsor and talk something over with my sponsors? There's something renting space. that's taking me out of the sunlight that I need to let go of, that I need to share. Yeah. It's really, and that practice, I talked about it briefly last night, that practice of two-way prayer, it's self-examination through prayer and meditation is what the 11th step is in the big book. Bill puts all the inventories in the 12 and 12 in step 10. He separates prayer and meditation and just does step 11 and 12 and 12 on just prayer and meditation. But all the inventories are in the step 10 and the 12 and 12. Whether it be spot check inventories, nightly inventories, annual inventories, semi-annual inventories. And I don't even want to get into that debate on whether, oh, that's not step 10, that's step 11. No, that's not step 11. Who cares? You know, the one thing that we know for sure is that we're going to be doing inventory the rest of our lives. I don't care what you call it. And then you have the other camp. This camp says, oh, you do one fourth step, and then you do step 10. You know, who cares? You've got the other ones that say, hey, we should do an inventory every year. Fine. All right, do one inventory. Do one fourth and fifth step, and then do step 10 every day. And then do 11 at night. Do a semi-annual inventory. Do an inventory once a year. I don't care how you do it. You're just going to be doing inventory the rest of your life. You're either going to live a life of self-examination or you're going to live a life of torment, and that's just my experience. Somehow I got to stay out of that conflict. I got to stay out of that whole deal. And we have these different camps that get into these semantics, and who cares what step you want to call it. Right? And here's how my life looks on a daily basis. Upon awakening, right, we pray. We ask God that we be void of self-will. We be void of my self-centeredness, right? Help, whatever that prayer may be, the third step prayer be a great prayer. You know, God, I offer myself to thee. Or the seventh step prayer, my creator, take all of me. You know, help me to overcome my defects of character today. Help me to carry the message of your will. Help me to do your work. Help me to do your bidding. These are words out of our book. Help me to carry a message of hope today. Help me to just help somebody. Get me out of myself. Right. And constructively view my day. Positively imagine my day. Right. And it doesn't have to. I'm one of them guys that's shot out of a cannon in the morning. For me to take 10 minutes, and I try to take about 10 minutes, get up, get down, sit in a chair in a living room where nobody's around before I put my shoes on and sit quiet. And just posit constructively. I used to be the guy, and I wish I could tell you I never do it anymore. Get the guy, get out of bed, walk in the bathroom, look in the mirror and go, shit. You know? Damn it. You know? Nothing's happened yet. This day's gonna freaking suck. You know? Why is that? Why alcoholics go down that road? That's not constructively viewing your day, right? Why don't I get up and look in the mirror and go, this is going to be a great day? I don't know. I don't know why I don't. Maybe that's alcoholism. I force myself to positively view my day. This is going to be good, right? And I have. I do live in fear at times. I do things on a daily basis that I've never done before. There are jobs that I do that I've never done. There's new merchandise coming out all the time. There's new stuff, and it's scary to me. Some people aren't. I was born fearful. So the unknown scares me. So I ask for guidance there. I have a job to do today that I've never done today, but you and I can get this done. Help me walk through the fear of that situation. Because I know that it always works out. It always works out. Yeah. I just have to show up. And sometimes that's just the prayer on my way to the job. God, just get me there. Just get me. Because I want to run from the unknown. I want to run from the scary. Yeah. I like the comfortable. I like the stuff that I do 1,200 of a year. I want to do that. And you take this other tough crap, you know. But what makes me value to my company is I'm the guy that has set up a reputation for himself that does anything, right? They don't want to do it, send Pat, right? That guy walked away from him. Pat'll do it. I've developed this reputation that I don't really like to live up to, but I've done it to myself. But it's also a gift in a sense, because I'm willing, I have a power that'll get me there. I'm willing to go there. Damn it, there was a time I had to smoke a joint on the way to get there, you know? I'd pass up the house three or four times, but, you know, eventually I'd get there and I'd be comfortable, you know? That's how my day starts, right? And then when facing indecision, when facing conflict, we pause. We get quiet. We walk away, maybe, right? When I get frustrated, when I'm working, this thing isn't going the way I wanted it to go. This thing isn't working out. And the more I try, the worse it gets. The book says we pause. These are great instructions. We pause. We back away for a second. We go outside. We phone a friend. I call my sponsee. Hey, how you doing? I was worried about you. You know, it was really about me. But I don't tell them that. Get out of it. Get out. Walk back away from the situation for the second. The more frustrated I get, the more anybody that's in service and construction knows that's true. You become part of the problem. You become the problem. Because the more pissed off you get, the worse it gets, and you end up cross-threading something or breaking something because you're frustrated. But if you could just back away for a second, say a quick prayer. God, help me to get out of myself. Help me to calm down. You know, make a phone call. Go for a little walk. And as we go through the day, we spot check inventory with step 10, right? And then at the end of the night, we do our nightly inventory. I think I shared with you guys, I don't know if I did or not, if it was here or not, but when I got sober, I was really religious about the nightly inventory. I mean, the nightly inventory originally was written. You know, we talked about this briefly, I think, a couple weeks ago about two-way prayer. And that's what the nightly inventory was. The nightly inventory was self-examination through prayer and meditation. They called it a two-way prayer. You would get quiet and let the voices come and then record the voices, record what comes through your mind, because that's the turmoil of the day. That's the conflict that's within your head. And to eliminate the conflict, you got to let it flow. It's not always, there's meditation and then there's self-examination through prayer and meditation. Meditation is quieting the mind and using a mantra or using music or the sound of the ocean or stuff. I love doing that stuff too. But the nightly inventory was designed to do an inventory. It was let the conflict come and record it. Yeah. And then get free of it. End the day on a note where I'm free. Is there any unfinished business? And if there is, the next morning you take care of it quickly, promptly. Take care of it. This I'm going to do immediately when I get up tomorrow. I'm going to take care of it. But the nightly inventory, I was religious about it for years. And then I got away from it. I almost got like too healthy for it, you know. I don't know what it is, lazy maybe. I stopped doing it, but I didn't stop my guys from doing it. You know, like my new guys that I would be sponsoring, I still do it. I want to see a written inventory at night. And I give them, I email them a sheet, and all you can open it up in Word or Excel, and you just answer the questions and then email it back to me. Some of them do it in their phone. And there's some apps now that, you know, I got apps. I got a lot of apps. But there's apps now where you can answer the question and email it, you know. And so about a month and a half ago, I got one of my guys, and I'm sitting at Starbucks with him, and I says, okay, we're at step 11. I want you to start, I'm going to email you these questions, and I want you to start answering the questions and sending them back to me. And he says, do you do it? I've never had anybody say that before. And I said, of course I do. So I've been doing it religiously since that day. Again. Hey, sometimes that's what it takes, you know. It takes a little prod from the sponsee. But here's the questions, right? This is what I do at night, and then I send it to my sponsor. Question one, was I resentful? If so, do a four-column inventory on the resentment, right? How was I selfish, egotistical, or self-seeking today? How was I dishonest? How was I afraid? Do I owe an apology? What have I wrongly kept a secret? Was I unkind, cruel, harsh, or unfeeling? Was I unloving, cold, unresponsive, or indifferent? What could I have done better? Was I thinking of myself most of the time? Was I thinking of what I could do for others? And the last question is, was I thinking of what I could pack into the stream of life? 12 questions. Right? And then they give you a little prayer. It says, and they says, be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making this review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. Record what the corrective measures are. Could say a prayer. God, please forgive me for my failings today. I know that because of my failings, I was not able to be as effective as I could have been for you. Please forgive me and help me live your will better tomorrow. I ask that you now show me how to correct the errors I have just outlined. Guide me and direct me. Please remove my arrogance and my fear. Show me how to make my relationships right. Grant me the humility and strength to do your will. Amen. What a way to end the day. Yeah. And when I do this, when I practice this, I stay in the sunlight. And my sponsor knows exactly where I'm at all the time. You know, and I stay current with him on a nightly basis. So, I mean, that's the to me, that's the design for living that works in tough going, Bill says. This is a design for living that works in tough going. This is a design for life. I need a design that's going to keep me out of conflict, and this keeps me out of conflict. When I get out of this rhythm, I suffer. And when I'm in it, I don't, you know. And we'll talk a lot about step 11 next week. But, you know, in step 11, one of the lines in the 12 and 12 that I love so much in step 11, it says, what do we do when we stop praying? You know, what do we do when we stop doing the nightly inventory? What do we do when we stop calling our sponsor? What do we do when we stop praying? What do we do when we stop going to meetings? What do we do when we stop sponsoring people? We simply start again. How simple is that? Thanks for having me tonight.
Please take them all. We got them for you, so they're yours.
Oh, that's right. I did share my cockroach phobia. Yeah.
Thanks.
You guys are brutal.
So despite the cockroach fail, that wasn't my idea. Pat did a great job tonight, so can we all give him another round of applause? Next, we're going to introduce the secretary, Ryan. Will you please?
Hi, my name is Ryan. I'm a recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. And I've asked Kim to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. So welcome, Kim.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kimberly, recovering alcoholic.
Hi, Kimberly.
Thanks for being here. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now seeing where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940s-style Big Book sponsorship from forward to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe and experience is that God has not changed over time. Neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? And is there anyone in the room that needs a sponsor, if you could raise your hand? Awesome. So we've got Kim in the back, is looking for a sponsor. So if any of the ladies in the room want to get with her at the end, we can help get her back to God. Please join us Monday nights for our Big Book Study meeting, where the book comes alive. Fellowship's at 6:30, and the Big Book Study starts at 7:15. And we have CDs, mugs, large print big books, little red books, and big book dictionaries for sale on the candlelit table in the back there. And we have announcements, right? Broward County Intergroup. There's information on how to get in touch with them, hours that they're open. You can get medallions, you can get literature. They're also having an open house. Is it this Saturday? Yeah. This Saturday. There's flyers on that in the back. We've got volunteer opportunities up here if you're looking for a way to serve. There's a couple ideas up here. AA's Got Talent. Are you the best singer at your halfway? We got AA's Got Talent coming up in February, so get ready. And that's it. We have one more quick reminder. There's a 75-foot no smoking or vape zone in front of the doors. They have the Cub Scouts upstairs, and they're on the patch right now, so just don't even tempt them. When you leave here tonight, just go down to the end here. We've got buckets set up if you want to go down there and smoke. So thank you for your cooperation on that. And we meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. I'll see you next week.
So we have tonight's session and all the other sessions on podcast online at alcoholicsandgod.org if you want to check that out. Again, I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night big book study on the third floor of this building. And whoever wants to thank the speaker, Pat, he's going to be up here. You can just line up down that center aisle. And we're going to close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father. See you all next Monday or Thursday. Can't get it right. If
zan, zan, zan. Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you forever. Yes, when you're laughing, blah, 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 when you're laughing. Yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, on the rain, so stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling, keep on smiling, baby, and I hope. Thank you.
Michael Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Fog is lifted. See the light, count my blessings when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Fear has left me and I'm standing tall. A pile of bricks now lies where once there stood a wall that I hid behind. For all this time, sometimes it takes a burning bush or a great white light to set you right. Well, my eyes don't cry now, I'm about to die. Pity party's over, the guest of honor has arrived, and he's on my side. For the first time in my life, are green now, growing vines. They twist and turn each way. Flowers blooming all the time outside my door. Like never before, I had to change everything to realize that today is the best day of my life. Broken man, I travel far and wide through the great divide, through his own heart, yeah. Well, I have a life today when it give away and it's just about to start. So I face each day brand new way, show up and plug in my guitar, and I play my songs, and people sing along, and stomp their feet and raise their arms, and here in this moment that we share, nothing could compare. Since when I go to sleep at night and I dream now. Yeah, I dream now. And everything's alright. Oh, man. Going on 10 years old, that song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.